Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
There was a boy.
What?
A very strange and special boy.
Nope.
And we wanted to hear it for him here on Let's Hear It for the Boys.
Here for the Boys.
I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about The Boys, Season 3, Episode 5, The Last Time to Look on This World of Lies.
Whoa.
So if you haven't watched it, it's live on Prime Video right now. It'll be Amazon Prime Video, not another Prime Video, in case you're
wondering. Oh, that's a good call. That's a
yes.
good call.
Well, they prefer to be called Prime Video. I think everybody else calls them Amazon, but, you know, let's just split the difference here. That's the important thing to get out here.
Hey, Prime.
I had a Prime Rib Video up, and it was just a piece of.
Because if you say just
meat.
Prime, I'm going to think Optimus Prime. You're talking about Optimus Prime.
Oh, sure. And if I say Amazon, just Amazon, you're going to think the Amazon River. So that's why you got to say the full name: Amazon Prime Video Original Content Creation Engine.
Oh,
wow.
That's the full.
Anyone really dropped
that?
The whole,
really just rolled off the tongue there. That was great.
Absolutely. But if you haven't watched this episode, please do, because we're going to spoil it. And brief bit of recap here, picking up on the mission to Moscow where the boys went to Russia. Kimiko now has lost her powers, is in bad shape, but absolutely loving it. As it turns out, by the end of the episode, she smoocheroos Frenchie, even though Frenchie is going through some conflicting emotions of his own. Very excited to hear what Pete, our rom-com expert, thinks about all this, because Frenchie is taken by Nina before he can come back and talk to Kimiko. There's also a big musical number in the middle here. Very fun.
Cute.
Meanwhile, Butcher and Huey are getting even deeper into the temporary V. Huey is clearly hepped up on it. He does tell Starlight about it, but at the same time, they go after Soldier Boy, thanks to the legend played by guest star Paul Reiser.
Dude's everywhere right now.
Everywhere. Yeah. I'm mad about you. Those are the only two things I can think of.
Talking about the Spectrum network release of
of
that.
Of course. That's the only season I've watched. And what was I saying? Oh, yeah. Soldier Boy explodes now. He is going after Crimson Countess. Butcher offers up on a silver platter in order to bring Soldier Boy over to his side when he realizes he, in fact, may be the weapon that will help them kill Homelander. Mother's Milk doesn't agree, gets roofied by Butcher. It's all very sad and horrible. And that's kind of where we end the episode. Again, very, very broad overview there. Lots of other things happen in the episode, particularly with the Seven. We also see some stuff going down with A-Train and his brother. Bad things happening
to
Blue Hawk. So dark, dark stuff in this episode, among all the usual Boys fun times. Now, before we get into the episode, though, I feel like there's something we should talk about that's been going on in the world of the Boys the past couple of weeks. The show has been review bombed, I think, as usual, on Amazon and IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes, at least as of the recording, still doing just fine. But people pretty upset about the content of the season. I think we could agree they're being ridiculous, right?
Well, the review bombs are sort of about the cancel culture and all that, right? It's sort of what they're satirizing and criticizing in the show. It's hitting its mark spot on, I would argue.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's funny because I think I've talked to the past couple of episodes. Well, you brought up the term scattershot the last episode, yeah. Justin. And I agree with that. I think even in this episode where I liked a lot of the stuff, there's a lot of stuff they're taking on at the same time. So it might all come together, but it's hard to keep track of it. But regardless of whatever I think of it from a critical perspective, like you're saying, Justin, it's clearly hitting the right people in the wrong ways. And that's good. Like, that is good satire then.
I mean, that's what I've always loved about The Boys from the very beginning, is it's like unblinking satirical eye. Like, whatever the targets are, the show like just goes hard at them. In the same way they go hard at the just like doing great superhero action and wild gore, it goes equally hard at the satire. And I feel like that's so rare. The show is just like, is just like a blunt instrument. It is what it is internally and externally at the same time. And I love that about it. It's a fearless show across the board.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we get into the episode again? A lot of stuff to talk about. I think one of the big things we should probably talk about right off, though, and I know I've said this past couple of episodes, but we've had Soldier Boy slowly sneaking his way into the narrative here after his reveal at the end of the last episode. He's finally in the present day. We see kick off the episode with footage of him being experimented on in Russia. We see him blow up a building, which is very scary. And then ultimately he teams up with the boys at the end. So how are you feeling about this arc? How are you feeling about this character now that we've seen a little bit more of him and what he can do?
I like the character as like this sort of the strongest weapon. Like I believe he can take out Homelander based on what we've seen here. I think the real thing that he's highlighting, he's like a weapon of mass destruction, but it's whoever's wielding him is the real sort of characters to watch. And it's, you're seeing Butcher like be just off his game, seduced by the power of V, becoming literally what he's been fighting against. His mother's milk calls him out right at the top of the episode, very cleanly about it.
How are you feeling about it, Pete?
Well, it's just one of those things where it's like, we're kind of, you know, watching this all crumble horribly around, but the kind of Soldier Boy thing is, it's nice to finally get some answers, what he can do. You know, it's an interesting twist where, like, we think a female is dead, you know, but then she doesn't have her powers, but she's like so happy about it, which is great. To see her so happy.
Well, wait, before we get on that, why don't we just stick to Soldier Boy for a second?
Okay,
I know you're excited to talk about Kimiko and Frenchie. I definitely want to
I like how they're doing this. We're getting a little bit of it. And it's funny because it's like, it also has this weird kind of like Captain America feel to it as well. And
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, just kind of person out of kind of time, you know, like he's looking at people. I like the way that there's not a lot of dialogue with him. He's just kind of like taking it all in. So it's interesting. And I think smart the way they're doing this and kind of unrolling this of what's happening here with this character and what's going to happen. Because it seems like, yeah, if you have powers, it doesn't work around him, or he kind of like, you know, can take your powers away, kind of like a rogue situation. You know what I mean? If she's got the gloves off.
But I think it's interesting that, like, he is an asshole. Like, he's famous. Everyone is like, hates him. His girlfriend in this episode, right before she dies, is like, I hate you. I always hated you. So, like, the fact that he's
And that's cold to hear from an ex. You know what I mean? Like, especially if you go away to prison, you think there's still some chance. There's some hope there, you know?
You think he had, when he was being operated on in Russia, he was like,
he said there's no reason to lie to her at that point. He was like, I was hoping you were going to save me, which, well, if you had a superpower partner, you would think that, like, all right, I'll get tortured for a loop, but then they'll show up, right?
Well, and there's also, not to take too much of a swerve, I just don't want to lose this thought, there's a very clear parallel in this episode between what Crimson Countess tells Soldier Boy and what Maeve tells Homelander when Homelander confronts her about their relationship, down to almost using kind of the same words. So to what Pete was saying earlier about Soldier Boy pretty clearly being a Captain America stand-in, the thing that is breaking my brain a little bit in this potential matchup that's coming down the road is thinking about it is, okay, we have Dick Captain America versus Dick Superman, which is a pretty classic, matchup. But in my mind, I'm like, Superman would win. This isn't a matchup.
Wow.
Why are you so ahead of what's happening right now? Like, be in the moment, man. Kind of enjoy where we are. Stop being always thinking ahead with you.
What are you, Stan Edgar?
Yeah, exactly.
It is impossible for me to watch TV shows and not try to think several episodes ahead. Drives me a little insane. I hate it.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely like, yes, we get the Captain America thing, him walking through town. He still has the beard right before he explodes. He kind of sees the way the world is now. I liked the way they did this move with him here, because I feel like an easy move, particularly for the boys, would be he sees a happy gay couple walking along. He sees Maeve with the rainbow and freaks out, and is like legitimately homophobic and terrible. But they do it in a much more subtle way, the way Jensen Ackles plays it, where he just sort of like goes and rolls his eyes and that's it.
Right.
So you know he's an asshole and you know he's homophobic, but they don't overplay their hand there.
Well, but I also think it's interesting that he's an asshole. We get the scene that we don't see is when he goes to see the legend and does some coke and just like has a nice sit down. And I thought that to me was a little strange, because it feels like we're purposefully keeping him on the shelf as like an undefined weapon, so that Butcher and the boys can sort of pick him off the shelf and aim him at Homelander, when really he has agency of his own. Like he's going to be who he's going to be. So I don't think they're being so naive, Butcher specifically here. And it makes me want to talk about sort of the larger dynamics in this season, where in the past it was always like Huey sort of versus Butcher and their takes, and finding out that they actually needed both of their powers, their sort of the way they do things together to save the day in these very unlikely situations. In this season, we're just so far away from that. And I feel like that's part of the reason why the show feels a little bit scattershot. And again, I love this show. It's not at all bad. It just feels very different, because Butcher and Huey are both like drug addicts and not providing anything really, except for like sort of bad decision making, because they're so focused on like, when are they going to get to use their superpowers next? And so I don't know where the core of the show is, and maybe we're going to find it here soon.
One thing I wanted to jump back to real quick, because Alex had such an interesting reaction when he saw the two people making out. I thought it was more like happening?
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like, it's interesting, but it was this thing of like, like this kind of like, he wasn't cool with it. I definitely got that vibe, but it was interesting that your reaction. Justin, did you want to maybe recreate?
Wait, are you calling me out here? I can't tell if you're calling me out or not.
No, I'm not calling you out.
Oh, okay. No, I think it's different takes, because when I saw that, moment, I think it was like, he's a man out of time. He sees like an openly gay couple on the street, and he's like, oh, that's not normal to where I come from. And it's about, to me, the point of that is though, like, he isn't like a Homelander that is like you said, Alex, gonna immediately be like, what? He's much more like, how can I do? He's like the smarter Homelander, the less like damaged version of him. This is speculation. And the same way that and not to get into the political side and the satire too much, the way we talk about like Donald Trump in our culture, where it's like, good thing he wasn't good at being bad. Good thing he wasn't good at like launching a coup. Mm-hmm. That's Homelander. And Soldier Boy may be the type of person who is both like wants to destroy the system for his own gain and is capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's talk about the legend, though, because that's another character that's introduced here. In the comics, This is kind of a Jack Kirby-ish stand-in, sort of. And the way that they do it there, because it's comics, of course, is he created comics about all of the superheroes out of Vought. Here, that gets translated to Paul Reiser being a very old Hollywood wheeler and dealer.
I thought this was great.
All of the references here were so good.
Oh, my God.
So
when he
precise.
Said Shannon Tweed, I was like, oh, shit.
Kelly
LeBrock. Yeah, I mean, he was dropping all of them. Also, Huey's just reaction like, oh, no, I'm full on cocaine.
That was such a funny.
Hilarious.
That was legit.
I'm full. I'm good. Thanks.
That's just such a great joke. Like, yeah. The other thing about the show is, like, they're writing, great sitcom level jokes in this. It's truly like setup punchline jokes, and him being like, I'm full of cocaine or whatever it was. It's just like, it is. Jack Quaid is just crushing it this season.
Yeah. I loved, again, though, the preciseness of all those references, the fact that they're so dusty. It's clearly, it just gets across that these are things that he's been dining out on for decades.
And he's just like, Kelly LeBrock, huh? Google it. He gets upset at him.
It's gotten to the point where nobody gets those references anymore. And he's just sitting around waiting for this. So love that relationship there. When they said the legend, I'll admit there was a little bit of disappointment. I was hoping there's been this fan casting of like Mark Maron playing Stan Lee. And I know the legend is a little bit more Jack Kirby than Stan Lee, but I was kind of hoping the door was going to open and it would be Mark Maron there. But Paul Reiser.
I mean, come on. Was still pretty funny.
Yeah.
Reiser's out there making moves right now.
Yeah. Reiser's doing.
We already mentioned Mad About You on Spectrum.
Yep.
That's it.
I will never not associate
Reiser's IMDb, dude. He's legit. Don't fucking come at Reiser.
Well, the Reiser defender has checked into the room,
don't
I guess.
Don't fucking act like he's not, can't be playing the legend. Come on.
No, he absolutely could be playing the legend. We're joking about Stranger Things, Pete. Stranger Things just came out and he's in it. That's what we're talking about.
He's so hot right now.
Yes.
Before we go off of this, Pete, when else have you ever said, like, oh, Reiser's getting it right now? When have you been, like, able to stand for Paul Reiser besides literally right in this
moment?
Not since
the 80s. But
even then, Mad About You, that was like, he was, like, the married guy on a sitcom that was good. But it's not like you were like, ride for Reiser. We rise
most people,
till dawn.
Most people looked at Disney movies and like, oh, that's what I want my relationship to be like. Pete looked at Mad About You. Right?
Do you want to talk about Mother's Milk wearing a Rough Riders t-shirt? It's all the Rough Risers out there rolling with them. Killing it since day
rough
one.
Rough Risers!
We in here.
Write that down for a t-shirt.
Yeah, that's a great, that reminds me, I need to pick up some of the t-shirts that have come out of our podcast, buying from the company store, but Rough Risers, the little Paul Reiser pick over top.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Solid gold right there.
Pete honestly comes up with most of our t-shirts. He doesn't mean to, but it just kind of happens.
Well, I think what it is he says something, you and I laugh, and then you make a note that should be a t-shirt.
That's how it works. That's how the sausage is made. The legend is great. Very excited to have him as part of the show. It's a really good dynamic. Hope we see him again. Continuing on that storyline, though, another thing that I really liked, and this is jumping to the end, is I loved... Well, actually, this is a thread throughout, but Huey and Annie's relationship, I think, is so good this season and gone through so many different permutations. I know it's rough to watch, but I really think they're doing a good job of putting them through a rough patch, but keeping them strong still and understanding each other, even though there's some fights here. Like I love the White Claw scene when Huey is like, listen, I got to tell you something. You're going to need a White Claw. And it cuts immediately, smash cut to her pounding several White Claws, going through everything that he's done. It's crazy.
We kind of got to back up the truck a little bit. Okay. Because we're talking about Huey, we're talking about this idea that in earlier seasons, Butcher looked at him as like he is the kind of like guiding principle of what is right and wrong. And Butcher has corrupted Huey now to the point where he was puking. And then kind of like throwing two to Butcher, being like, fuck you. You know what I mean?
I don't know if Justin's about to say this, but I kind of disagree. I don't think it's Butcher's fault.
Agreed. Like, that's what I was going to say too. What? Not Butcher's fault. This is Huey making it. Here's what it is. I think two issues are happening inside his tiny little brain, and has no way to deal with it. The revelation of Newman being a soup, and that, and the fact that she was the head popper, she was his shining light for so long, and so that set him off. Lying at work, gets busted by a coworker, and says he had a sprain. I'm just like, nonsense choices. And then he's always felt like Starlight has to defend him, and he can't step up and protect her.
Yeah, I was paying attention. He went on that monologue about, like, it's my chance to save you. Yeah. But what sucks is we have Huey, who is used to be this kind of principal and, like, a good guy, now being horrible. And for the first time, you're kind of questioning whether or not him and Starlight are a good match. And as someone who is trying to ship them, it's heartbreaking to see him drop the ball like this and, like, demand points after the fact. I mean, that was a crazy argument.
I forgot. You're a home light guy. So I it could work out that way, Pete, if that's what you want.
I want Homelander to be good enough for Starlight, and
more like Homelander, strong.
No, don't put words in my mouth, but I'm just saying that, like, this episode was heartbreaking because Huey's really fucking up.
Well, I do think one major part of it is him being hepped up on the V. Like, I do not think that is helping things. That's clearly tweaking and changing his personality. He is exhibiting classic drug abuse behavior where he's like, it's fine, I can take it, I can do whatever I want. Yep. It's awesome, it's so good. It's like we talked about, I think, on the last episode with the temporary V, it clearly gets towards something that V does to people's personalities, that it makes them more whatever it is. And for Huey, that's nervous, that's insecure, it's amping up all those feelings, and that gets exactly into the thing that you were bringing up, Pete, that he tells Starlight about just wanting to support her and save her sometime. Want to save her, not support her. And I do think it ties into a bigger theme, not just of this episode, but of the season, about, and maybe the show, honestly, about, like, deconstructing masculinity. You know, something that we've talked about since the very first episode is how uber masculine and almost edgelord the comic book is. And the show has always worked against that. It's broken down those ideas. And what I think it's doing here is, you know, you have Soldier Boy, who is this very, like, 1950s, 1960s ideal of a man. The Legend is doing the same thing where he's like, I'm swinging Hollywoods, I'm Bob Evans, look how great things are. And both of those things, we very clearly know in hindsight, are real bad. But Huey is a modern man. He is a man from the 2020s who is normally there for his woman and supporting her. But there is that germ, that seed inside of him of, like, I want to be the one. Like, I want to be the man, whatever that means. And whether it's the V or his natural insecurities or something like that, that is amping it up to a level where, and he doesn't need that. She is her own person. She can do her own thing. She can save herself. And all she needs is for Huey to be an equal partner in the relationship. And that's not what he's giving her right now.
Yeah. I mean, she was super clear about that, which was great. But also, like, she was able to see through his shit so fast when she was like, wait a second, you loved it. He was like, yeah. And the way he said, like, I clenched my butt and I teleported, like, oh my God, it was so funny. He was like, I saved someone, you know, like, just this kind of, like, ridiculous, you know. And well, I was glad that she was able to really pick up on it and, you know, like, was super clear about what she wants and, you know, what he should be doing. So I'm hoping that he fucking gets his shit together.
Well, and the other thing is, granted, he's not living TV seasons the same way we are, but the past two seasons, he hasn't needed to be the guy. He has been crucial in saving the day every single time. Even at the beginning of the season, before the temporary V, he was able to find out the information on Newman with no superpowers whatsoever. So he doesn't need that shit. And Starlight knows it. And I think ultimately it's frustrating for her that he feels like he needs superpowers the way she has superpowers. It's not necessary. So we'll see if they break through. We'll see if they continue there. Why don't we jump to the other couple, which is going through some fun but rough times.
Maeve and Butcher.
Maeve and Butcher. You want to talk about that real quick?
Well, I think there's a good touchstone here in that Maeve says, like, V enhances what you are. That's what we get with Huey. Like, it does bring their personalities more to the forefront in the reflection of their powers as well as sort of the way they're acting. The Maeve has these two sort of big scenes, one with Butcher, where they both break their sobriety and then hook up. Curious to see how that goes. I mean, that could be a relationship that continues on in this show. I don't know. And then she has the scene
hashtag
with Homelander.
Butcher. Hashtag Butcher. Butcher. Bave.
Bave. And then we have the sort of other side of that scene, that relationship with Maeve and Homelander, where she's like, I always hated you. And Homelander's ahead of her, knows that she's been working with Butcher and all this is going on. So her role in this show is it's hard to sort of pin down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes she's really a part of everything that's happening and sometimes she's not at all. But yeah, that whole scene was so intense when Homeland was like, I can smell him all over you. I was like, oh shit. Like, I think it was just a one-time deal of both of them just kind of falling off the wagon and wanting
the sex wagon.
Mm-hmm. It's talking about the drinking.
Drinking. Oh, I got you. Yeah, the sex wagon is nothing like a fall off the sex wagon.
One other thing that I want to throw out about this, and I think you were kind of getting towards this a little bit, Justin, but Maeve has been a point of frustration for me this season because she's such a good character and the actor is so good. And like we talked about, she's been kind of in the background doing her, you know, that scene in The Simpsons where Homer is like, ooh, what's that ninja on the lawn going to do? He's just standing there waiting to do something. So there's that feeling of that a little bit of like, she's going to tear the doors off at some point and maybe that still will be coming. But particularly what I found frustrating about this episode, and I'm guessing at least some section of the audience did as well, is Maeve is bisexual. So yeah. Cool. She could hook up with men. She could hook up with women. It's not a problem. But for a show that barely has any LGBTQ+ rep, and it is just Maeve, for her to not be in really the first four episodes, and then the fifth episode, the one where she has the biggest scenes, or where she's talking about her relationship with men, she sleeps with Butcher, we haven't seen her girlfriend anywhere, who was a major part of, I think, both of the first two seasons, at the very least, the second season.
Definitely last season. And yeah. Though it was about that falling apart for her and her then just fucking piles of people.
So, yes. So there is that, but I think there is a level
but I
where
agree
I'm
with
like,
you. Yeah,
the show has to do a little better there, is I guess what I'm saying. And mind you, we still got another three episodes left in the season, I guess, after this, so things could turn around. We could see something more with Maeve.
Four, though. Is it four?
There's eight total. Eight. So, yeah, so just three more episodes after this.
Wow.
But as is, I think regardless of what happens with Maeve, there's almost definitely going to be a season four of this. I really do think they need to work on the whole LGBTQ+ rep part of things because they're kind of falling down in that area.
Well, and it does feel like she is sort of like not a character we ride with. We feel her emotions. She definitely feels like almost like an oracle or something that the characters, and I'm saying that's not a great spot for her, a character that I think we used to be able to ride along with. She's these, in this episode specifically, Butcher and Homelander go to her and learn something about themselves, which is not great for a strong female character as her role in the show currently. But like we're saying, like I do really like her. I think she's a great character, and I sort of feel like she's gonna come through and be save the day eventually. And let's not forget, she is taken by Homelander and Black Noir at the end of this episode.
Yeah, so that's real bad. Pete, though, I do
great,
like. Oh, go ahead.
Great use of Black Noir there.
Yes,
very very scary.
Yeah, no, that was scary, and I'm scared for Maeve. I also be real quick before we move on, really like that scene as well of Annie following up with Ashley to try to find out where Maeve is, confronting her and being like, please be human for a second. And the way Colby Minifee plays that scene, just pausing and like it almost breaking through. I was so tense watching that because I was like, oh my God, Ashley, her humanity is going to break through. Doesn't happen.
I love Colby Minifee. I think she's so good. She can play the comedy side of Ashley and sort of this darker side. I called it out last episode, the episode before. I feel like she's the new Stan Edgar. She gets the CEO job here, and she's on that dark path. I think by the end of it, she's going to be in that same position and be turning the tables on Homelander at some point and controlling him. Or
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it.
If he even survives this this season. So I love that. I also think, shout out to Starlight, I feel like the way that she sort of sees a situation and almost cracks Ashley there, that's sort of her more useful power, I think. Her actual superpowers we don't see a lot of, at least this season. I don't think we've really seen them at all. But her real power is negotiating all these like sociopaths that she has to deal with.
Yeah.
She's legitimately, and this is obviously purposeful, she's the only actual hero in the show. You know, yeah. the scene after Soldier Boy blows up the building and they cut to Vought Tower, and Starlight is like, we got to do something about the situation. And Homelander says, okay, well, we'll talk to PR and we'll get a message out and we'll decide on that. And she's like, no, we have to save people. What are you doing? Yeah. It's great. I love seeing it, but it's so frustrating to see her stuck in the middle of this world where nobody is doing anything. Or nobody is doing anything correct. They're just in these petty squabbles, even the boys, like even those characters. So
yeah, I wish I knew how that felt to be in a world where you'd feel like you can't really do anything, you know? Something to think about. That's the power of a satirical show.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Frenchie and Kimiko. It's been long enough. Pete.
Oh, my God.
Take us through it.
So this is an emotional roller coaster here because, you know, the will they, won't they vibes. And, you know, it seems like Frenchie almost lost her. She comes back and then we get this amazing, first off, fun musical. They make such hilarious choices. The whole routine was really hilarious, a little old school and fun. And so then we get this amazing kiss and then Frenchie looks like he's not feeling it, and like, or the fact that the secret that he has to work you know, again for the Russian lady who he hates,
Nina,
and it tore me apart because I was like, no, we're finally, you two have to work, you know what I mean? Like, if you guys don't run away together, like, what, you know, it's just absolutely heartbreaking to see like them finally kiss and then Frenchie not feel it. Go for a coffee.
Are you crying?
Really?
The middle of a kiss, you go for a coffee?
I mean, don't you? Well, he wants to get a little caffeinated, a little juiced up.
Yeah.
Coffee's like sort of the coffee's the V24 for the common people.
The kiss will keep you awake. You
ever make it out with a girl and you start kissing like 10 seconds later, your eyes are drooping. You're falling asleep on her face.
Kissing the wrong girl.
I keep a tiny Keurig right next to the bed. Oh, in case I fall off the sex wagon and I need a little goose.
Kissing a girl. I was kissing a thing of NyQuil. Was that the problem?
That's probably what it was.
That's true. Okay. Kissing that NyQuil and going right to espresso? That's your own personal V24.
I love this whole sequence. I thought the dad sequence, like you said, was fantastic. I also love the moment before it, the way they played that, where Kimiko says, and starts to creak out, the way they played that, where you think, or at least I thought I was fooled, being like, oh, she lost her powers and that's what was preventing her from talking. Now she can talk. Oh my God. And then they went to the song and dance. And I was like, oh, okay, it's not real. She's imagining it, but I loved it.
I think that still might be the thing that happened.
Yeah.
I'm not 100%. The way that it shifted into the musical number, I thought was more of a like a creative choice. And there was maybe a little bit of that happening. Here's the thing. I worry about this storyline. There's bad vibes in the air. Like, I think Kimiko doesn't have her powers now, but I feel like she might get them back. It's a hypothesis I'm going to throw out, but it feels like Soldier Boy's powers are radiation based. So it feels like maybe her body was irradiated. And so her healing factor is taking longer to expel the radiation, and it will eventually, and then she will be powered up again. And that's where I think Soldier Boy's power set hitting Homelander will be an interesting turn later on.
Wait, we need to talk about the kiss though. Like, why is Frenchie not into this? Like,
Why is Frenchie not Frenching in a kissing way?
Mm-hmm. Oh, French class. I get it. Pete, I think you are spot on with what you were saying, though, is that he is scared about the thing with little Nina. Like, I think, sorry, she's just called Nina on the show.
She's not little.
Sorry, regular sized Nina.
Regular. Cool yeah. shirt Nina is what cool I call shirt. Her, because that yeah. shirt was cool.
It was very cool. I think that's what it is. Like, he initially seems into it, and then he sort of calmly pulls back, which certainly made me worry, thinking, okay, maybe he just wants a really intense friendship with Kimiko and that's it. But the other part of it is we've kind of established that he is a sub and he needs a dom, whether it's Nina or Butcher or something like that. So to be in a relationship where it's even, like with Kimiko, like we've been talking about the problem with Annie and Huey right now as well, that might be the thing that's scaring him. Like, what would yeah. it be like to be in a relationship where I'm actually even with this person?
And you can tell they're even because they split the headphones.
People are scared of happiness sometimes, Pete. It happens.
I just, you know, don't hurt Kimiko.
I think everybody is going to get hurt on this show all the time. I think that's yeah. a certainty.
She's been through sort of so much.
But I do think, I worry about them surviving this season, but if they do both, I'm starting to feel like there might be a relationship here.
Yeah, potentially. We called it as a friendship, but I think it's becoming something a little bit more. Why don't we talk about A-Train's storyline? Because I know I've been on this the past couple of episodes. It's rough to watch, but of all the things they're doing, I think they're absolutely nailing this storyline.
Yes.
I mean, this stuff, the Blue Hawk, the way all of the Blue Hawk stuff was so, like, just spot on as a criticism of, like, a bunch of things. Just the All Lives Matter, policing in America. Like, the takedowns here were so good, so quick. And I don't know the actor's name that played Blue Hawk, but, man, did he nail that sort of mix of, like, nervousness and, like, lack of confidence and bravado and, like, outright Proud Boy style self-assurance in your, like, racism and all that. Like, I just thought it was horrible to watch, but really tragic and well done.
Yeah, agreed. I also was wondering, like, I kind of missed it somehow, of like how it got, it seemed like he was doing a TV interview that made it seem like what his reaction was okay. And I was like, after the community yeah. center, I was like, oh, Blue Hawk is fucked. Like, there's no way you can explain yourself out of this. And then it seemed like he did. And I was like, wait, how did he get out of that?
It was Vought PR clearly manipulating the thing to make it he was attacked by Antifa, which, again, yeah. is like,
oh my God,
very on point for everything that happens in our world right now. But also, just to take a step back, all the A-Train stuff is really perfectly done as well. Like, this slow awakening he's going through in terms of race and how he needs to deal with race. The way they played that scene in Ashley's office where they're getting the apology yeah. from Blue Hawk. Blue Hawk is, you know, sort of pushing back on it a little bit. Ashley is saying nonsense the entire yeah. time about, like, I'm glad we're having this conversation. These words are important. Conversations, yeah. And the fact that A-Train, like, you could see working in the back of his mind, like, he knows this is bullshit and this is yeah. all bullshit. And he's like, how much do I not like this bullshit? Like, how much more yeah. of this can I actually deal with? Can I actually do something about this? And I do think there's a really big turning point there, because something awful happens to his brother.
Like, I was like, no.
Won't be able to walk again.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. Come on. Like, you know, I can watch 80 exploding heads, but don't make that the thing. Like, oh, I was just felt so bad for his brother after everything. I think the guy who's playing A-Train is doing such a great job of trying mm-hmm. being stuck in between this, you know, like, he's not fast enough to kind of like live both these lives anymore. And it's like this thing of like, he's got to really come to grips with himself and what he's all about. And they're playing it so good and so well. It was really hard to watch, but also really amazingly done. So it's, Yeah, I mean, some parts the show is missing and some parts it's hitting really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bunch of other stuff happened in this episode we should probably touch on. We could talk about the Homelander stuff as well. I think they're doing a really nice job here. I know I've been talking about how they're hitting a lot of different metaphors with Homelander. I do think Trump is the most precise one, but just this episode, just from a plot perspective, him finding himself exactly in the place the Stan Edgar cursed him with the last episode
of, like,
now you got to run it. And you could see him fuming about the fact that he got himself out of this trap that Maeve and Starlight put him in at the end of season two. And now he'd put himself in another trap.
Yeah, it's so well done. The scene where he's talking to the meeting, the suits, and he's in full breakdown. He's like broken. He's like twitching and like he just can't deal the stress and the fact that he's completely, he just established himself as nothing can touch me. I'm so far above you. And he can't handle this meeting. He knows it. And you see him crack right there on camera in front of us. And then he vacillates between like being a wreck and then being like sort of duplicitous and ahead of Maeve and some of the other characters. Like, it's great. And Antony Starr is so good. He's so fun to watch, despite the fact that he is absolutely evil in the show. It's really good.
And I also... go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, just the fact that, like, all right, let's go around and say each other's name. And then somebody, like, jumps ahead of the thing and kind of gets right to it. And he was just, like, the wave of, like, rage and emotion they went through that was really impressive. Yeah, and it is this thing that what's nice about the show that they're constantly dealing with is this thing of, like, what happens when people get power and all of a sudden you think you're going to have control over stuff, how little you do, and, like, it's very interesting to see everybody kind of falling into these things where it was like, and he's like, oh, I'm going to be co-captain, I'm going to have to be power, and then, like, you know, Homelander being like, okay, now we're all up here on the 99th floor and I'm running shit and it's an absolute nightmare. So yeah, kudos.
The scene on the Cameron Coleman show, once again, these are some of my favorite scenes this season. I love this as just a way for the show and Homelander specifically to put out his conspiracy theory takes and really go after news, satirized news, the Storm Chasers thing where he completely disavows the Storm Chasers and then literally echoes their take seconds later. You can see that every day on cable news.
Yeah. Well, and also, I thought this was an interesting thing. I don't think they meant this. You know, I think they meant this more in the terrorism sense. But Homelander also saying there's no supervillain attacks. Go out there, enjoy your restaurants, go to your movies. That's the same text that they've been using this entire time with COVID.
Yeah.
Maybe they were playing off that a little bit. Whatever.
I think so.
Yeah. Whatever it was, it definitely reminded me specifically of that in a really, really awful way.
And then right next door to Homelander's story is Todd this season, who is Mother's Milk's ex's new husband, right? They're married.
Oh, my. And that whole thing where, like, he goes to get his daughter.
Yeah. And like the way you can see every time, again, I don't know the actor playing this part either, but every time Homelander comes up and we saw him watching the news a couple episodes back, this glow comes into his eyes where he's just in love with him. And that devotion that they're using for this character, I think, is so good. And then so sad that Mother's Milk, you know, has that attack about seeing Soldier Boy on the news and leaves his daughter. Another just like...
A horrible thing to see his daughter be like, Daddy, don't leave. You know, like he has to, you know, get out of there. He's having kind of like a panic attack or a flashback kind of attack type of thing. And like... but yeah, this whole thing of like him being like, oh, you're talking about the greatest superhero the world has ever known, Homelander, you know, like, it's they're doing a lot with this show. It's, it's a fun mix of opinions and like, you know, who we're idolizing, what are we putting in front of other things? It's interesting to see people have to have discussions and kind of forced to react to each other like that.
We probably should mention the Seth Rogen cameo as well that happens during the Crimson Countess scene. She is...
I don't know if that was a purposeful cameo. I think that was just like accidental footage.
I think his camera just came on, unfortunately.
Right, he was already logged in as Sir Comes-a-Lot 779.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the 778 was taken.
Of course. Oh, is that your username, Pete?
That's Pete.
Nope.
Pete's?
No, wow, seems like it very specific. Well, do you think he was born July?
Justin, your username is falls-off-the-sex-wagon, right?
That's right.
779 as well.
It makes it hard for me when I say I'm on the sex wagon, like my actual screen name.
Yes.
About falling off the sex wagon.
So many... This was so packed with so many Easter eggy callback details here, beyond the fact that Seth Rogen has been on the show, I think, once per season now. Yep. So having him show up, that he's using the Wish lotion, which is Starlight's lotion, that I think they called out as like awful and nobody likes and smells terrible. Yeah. And then she puts on her sexy music, his Chimps Don't Cry, the song that she recorded and played for them earlier in the season as well. So many things going on in the scene at the same time. Very funny and very gross, and just with a nice gross kicker there at the end from Seth Rogen, as usual.
Yeah.
Other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out in particular?
I've got a couple. We got the Deep heading down to head crime analytics. I think
this guy loves cupcakes.
Loves cupcakes. He's such a doof. Small potato. Always fighting for the smallest potato. Though I do think, just like in seasons past, he will end up playing a role in saving the day, perhaps by accident, is my prediction.
Well, the whole Annie having to deal with, like, there were only, like, two people in the room. Like, where is it? Well, the Deep fired everybody, you know. Was such a small, little, huge move. It was so well done.
I love the line, I'm like Dom Toretto, quick and all about family. I thought that was so funny. Fighting fairies and dancing dildos. I've seen Train Spotting.
I've seen Train Spotting live. It was hysterical.
Great. And a shout out to the flowers with a card that said congrats from Lindsey Graham. Yeah. This show is just finds every nook and cranny to cram something fun. And it's great.
And then go ahead, Pete.
Also, the Homelander freaking out, thinking it was Jake Tapper behind the, like, that was also a really great line. Also Mother's Milk when he's like, this isn't Grubhub, motherfucker. Like, just, just so many great lines.
I do think on the Mother's Milk button, we didn't really talk about him, but Butcher roofing him at the end is so awful. And I think really points to, like, we just got the team back together in episode 2 or whatever it was, and we're already seeing everything completely fall apart. Yeah. It's so sad. So,
how's he going to come back from this?
I don't know. Probably not at all. We'll see what happens there. And the other thing... This feels like probably, I don't know, the slogan of the show, Butcher says out loud to Maeve when they get wasted. He says, with great power comes the absolute certainty that you'll be a right cunt, which I was like, all right, there you go.
As soon as he said that line, my first thought was like, I wonder if Alex is going to say that out loud again.
I mean, I did, but I also think, like, legitimately, that's the line of the show. That's what it is, or at least from Butcher's perspective. So...
But it's been this kind of like underlying thing of this, you know, the show of like power corrupts. So it's this kind of whole lens that we're kind of, you know, showing stuff through.
I think Butcher said it better, but I
agree. I agree.
Who was best boy this episode? Justin, who was best boy this episode?
Oof, tough call, but I'm going to go with... Starlight in this episode. I think she, like we said, she's like the only bright spot in a show where everyone is not doing their best. And I think Aaron Moriarty's portrayal is excellent.
I'm going to give it up to Kimiko this episode. Did I take yours? Yep. Sorry about that. Right. We didn't talk much about the dance sequence, but I love that dance sequence so much. It was so great to see her cutting loose. The dancing was fun. Frenchie with his like little jerky dance moves was really cute as well. Yeah. But The whole thing was delightful to watch, and I had so much fun in the middle of a lot of darkness in this episode. Pete, what about you, best boy?
You took mine, so I guess I'll have to ride with Riser. You know what I mean?
Wow, rough risers.
We in here.
I don't know what that means, but I do know you can support our podcast at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the boys. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Hear It Number 4 The Boys on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time. Boys.
What?
Again, I haven't gone back and listened. I don't know what it is. I'm sure there was a good sign off the first two seasons, right?
I think we've been saying Rough Risers the whole time, if I remember correctly.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.